From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Environmental organizations and activists ridiculed President Trump's Monday afternoon speech, lauding America's environmental leadership. The 45th president has been more hostile to environmental regulations than perhaps any other president in recent history. But pollsters working on the president's 2020 re-election campaign apparently realized that voters like a leader who protects their air, water, and climate. So Trump attempted to play along, touting his record, making up facts without a hint of irony. Meanwhile, two actual political leaders on the environment, Senator Bernie Sanders and Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, on Tuesday introduced a bill calling on Congress to declare a climate emergency. More than two dozen lawmakers, including most of the Democratic presidential candidates, signed on to the bill. My guest is Lindsay Myman. She is the senior U.S. communications specialist at 350.org. Welcome to the program, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me.
So why do you think Trump gave this speech? And in a minute, we'll actually play some clips from the speech and get your reaction. But first, was it, as far as you can tell, primarily because he thinks that this is what voters, even those maybe in his own base, want to hear?
Mm-hmm. Well, I won't attempt to offer any logic behind why they said the speech, but as you said, it's absolutely clear that climate is a defining issue of our time, and more than two-thirds of Americans are alarmed at the climate crisis and believe that it will impact them and their lives. So that might give a hint on why it's made it to that federal stage.
Let's actually hear a short clip of what Trump had to say. It was a 45-minute speech, so quite lengthy. In this particular clip from the speech, he actually attempts to blame the previous administration for their actions on the climate.
My administration is now revising the past administration's misguided regulations to better protect the environment and to protect our American workers, so importantly. As an example, there is a very good place for solar energy. I'm a believer in solar energy. It hasn't fully developed. It's got a long way to go, but it's really got a tremendous future. The United States does not have to sacrifice our own jobs to lead the world on the environment.
And that is President Trump in a clip from his speech on Monday about the environment and his leadership on the environment. Lindsay Myman, first he said that he was revising the previous administration's misguided positions. And of course, the Obama administration was not strong enough, but compared to Trump, they were, you know, Obama was a climate leader. And then he talked about solar and how much he believed in solar and said it had potential. What do you make of these claims?
It's an interesting speech to hear. And I think we know what the fact is, that the surge of renewable energy, of energy, of the movement for climate justice is not a result of the Trump administration's action. If anything, it's a result of their inaction. And truly, those responsible for making climate such a central issue is young people and frontline communities that have been fighting for real solutions to the climate crisis for years. The climate justice movement is stronger than ever. And I think if Trump's speech wasn't so, you know, so laughable, it would be considered, you know, an ironic speech. But we really hear him spouting the same playbook of fossil fuel companies that have been, you know, burying the truth about climate science, that have been trying to deceive the public and delay meaningful climate action. But the climate justice movement led by young people shows that there's no stopping us and this is the time to take action.
What do you make of the fact that he said solar has yet to develop? I mean, aren't solar panels the cheapest they've ever been? Isn't the industry, you know, at a pretty remarkable place right now and pretty fully developed?
Absolutely. We are at a very pivotal time, and we are seeing solar, wind, geothermal energy taking off. I believe it was in April or earlier this year that renewable energy actually powered more homes than coal did for the first time here in the U.S. And we're seeing that, you know, beyond the U.S., but in places like Germany, in Scotland, all over the world, where not only are renewable energy sources safer, but they're also more cost effective and efficient and actually outpacing fossil fuels.
So let's play another clip from Trump's speech where he attempted to claim that the parts of a recent U.S.-Mexico trade agreement that his administration helped to negotiate has extremely stringent environmental regulations.
My administration set the new global standard for environmental protections with unprecedented provisions in the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, commonly referred to as the USMCA, which includes the first ever provisions to take on the challenge of marine litter and debris. And I'm sure you've all seen by watching televisions, by maybe reading about it, tremendous problem. Thousands and thousands of tons of this debris float onto our shores after it's dumped into the oceans by other countries. The tides come to us. Usually that was a good thing, but this isn't so good. This is a tremendous problem. Thousands and thousands of tons of garbage comes to us.
Lindsay Myman, that's President Trump speaking on Monday, first talking about stringent environment regulations in the U.S.-Mexico trade agreement, and then about garbage washing onto our shores. I couldn't quite tell whether those two issues were linked. Could you make sense of what he was saying?
Not quite, but what I would point out is that while the cleanup of our ocean and marine life is absolutely crucial, the same companies and corporations that are producing levels of plastic are fossil fuel companies. So they have attempted to make it so that we don't have a choice in the energy that we use, in the goods that we can purchase, and are attempting now to spout the same, you know, industry lies. Exxon knew as far back as the 1950s the impact of fossil fuel use on climate change and on our communities, our air and water. And instead of telling the rest of us, Exxon executives buried the truth. And these are the same kind of slowdown and deceptions that we're hearing from the Trump administration, when really getting to the root of the problem means a just and equitable phase out of fossil fuels and transitioning to 100% renewable energy, and prioritizing those that the transition will impact first and worst, including current fossil fuel workers, including those living in coastal communities, in Black and brown and low-income communities, those who are bearing the cost of these industry and the Trump administration's lies. So it's really crucial that we take issue at the root of the problem.
Did Trump actually discuss the climate in any meaningful way during his 45-minute speech on the environment?
As long as you're not naming the fossil fuel industry and fossil fuel executives as the primary perpetrators of the climate crisis, then that is not meaningful action on climate. You know, we're no longer at a place where we can be pointing to a problem and saying it's a problem. What we need is bold and sweeping action and holding accountable those who are most responsible, which includes making polluters pay for the climate crisis and impacts that we're experiencing already.
He, I understand, mostly discussed, or in many places discussed achievements of the government that were directly the result of Obama administration efforts on regulations that may not have been directly related to the climate, such as on clean water, clean air. And of course, when he first came into office, Trump proudly declared that his administration was going to be cutting environmental regulations because they, you know, get in the way of corporate profits. So it's really interesting to see him make these claims, claim credit for them, and, you know, in other cases, just simply make stuff up. I imagine President Obama might be feeling quite good about himself after listening to Trump's try to take credit for some of his modest achievements.
Yeah, make no mistake. Any achievements that were made at that scale were the direct result of people power and millions of people demanding action at every level of government, changing the public conversation and demanding bold and sweeping action. The Trump administration continues to stack their cabinet and officials with fossil fuel industry puppets. So as you said, it is really interesting to hear them talking about climate achievements when those any meaningful climate action has really been a result of people power.
Right. And certainly any credit Obama takes, as you are pointing out, is the result of grassroots pressure on him and his administration. I want to play one more clip from the Trump environment speech where he, of course, couldn't resist slamming the Green New Deal, perhaps the most significant piece of legislation, even though it's just a resolution to come out of Congress. Modest again as that is, it's so far the strongest thing that we have, introduced by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Ed Merkley. And this particular Green New Deal has been the bane of Republicans, including Trump.
We're focused on practical solutions. More than 100 Democrats in Congress now support the so-called Green New Deal. Their plan is estimated to cost our economy nearly $100 trillion, a number unthinkable, a number not affordable even in the best of times. If you go 150 years from now and we've had great success, that's not a number that's even thought to be affordable. Kill millions of jobs, it'll crush the dreams of the poorest Americans, and disproportionately harm minority communities.
President Trump discussing how the Green New Deal will crush the dreams of poor Americans and particularly harm the minority communities that he apparently cares so much about. Lindsay, what do you make of this? He spent a few minutes during a 45-minute speech on the environment trashing a very important piece of environmental legislation.
Yeah, well, firstly, everything that he is saying is, again, continuing the doubt and deception of the fossil fuel industry. I would go so far as to say he is lying to the public. And when we talk about paying for the Green New Deal, that's a really interesting angle that folks are taking, because the cost of implementing such transformative policy, the cost of inaction is far greater. We're already seeing millions of lives, homes, families, our health, safety, and democracy at stake. And we've seen this before. We've seen our country mobilize in the face of adversity. And now we have the opportunity to do so and prioritize those who need this transformation most. The Green New Deal is a policy platform. So we have the opportunity as people in America to define and implement what that means for us. That should mean that our healthcare is taken care of. That should mean a good job for anyone who wants one. It should mean investing in current fossil fuel communities to transition at the speed and rate that they can, and really providing opportunity for a generation of folks to live in a world that is not, you know, taken over by corporate profit and greed, but rather puts our health and safety first.
So then a day after Trump gave the speech, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders, as I mentioned, jointly introduced a bill, a non-binding resolution to declare a climate emergency in Congress. And I'm wondering if you think this is sort of a, you know, American counterpart to what recently unfolded in Britain with the declaration in Britain of a climate emergency after massive grassroots pressure pushed lawmakers there to do something similar. I mean, there were people on the streets of London for weeks and weeks bringing that city to a standstill.
Yes, absolutely. And as you said, this is a direct result of public pressure. You know, youth leaders striking from school each Friday in unprecedented levels of climate action. In terms of a climate emergency, you know, we absolutely applaud this resolution. I think it is a sharp contrast to the grave inaction that the Trump administration is taking, and I'd go further than inaction to say regression. And we also need to be careful about what it means to declare a climate emergency. And that is twofold. One, we've seen in the past, and we're seeing right now with the Trump administration declaring a national emergency at the U.S.-Mexico border, that historically that has led to militarization. And so we must not repeat that as we, you know, declare this crisis with the urgency that we must. And the second is that we can't just stop at declaring, you know, something as an emergency. We can't. We've seen this in Canada, where Prime Minister Justin Trudeau declared a climate emergency and then approved the Trans Mountain pipeline the next day. So while it is certainly significant to be declaring the level of urgency needed to act at scale with the crisis, that requires concrete action. And that means that all elected officials in the House, Senate, at every level of government need to be taking bold and meaningful action to move off fossil fuels to 100% renewables in a just and equitable way, and making holding accountable those who are most responsible for the crisis.
So as far as you understand, what exactly would this resolution entail if, you know, somehow it managed to pass both houses of Congress? Do the details spell out anything about the military taking a role? Because, of course, if that were the case, that would be very troubling. But I can't imagine that lawmakers like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez would push such a bill.
That's a great question. And again, the demand is really for all elected officials to take action at scale with the climate crisis. And, you know, declaring this level of urgency should be a signal to elected officials everywhere that if they're not doing everything in their power to take action, then they can expect significant public pressure to make sure that climate is a priority in their work. Just this week, the East Coast of the U.S. is experiencing record rainfall. We're bracing for a torrential storm in the Gulf Coast. Fossil fuel companies are actually, you know, taking their workers out of the field in the Gulf Coast because of this storm that's coming up. So, you know, we're already experiencing the impacts. We're already living with the urgency and chaos that climate change brings. And it's up to all of us to put pressure on our elected officials and politicians and decision makers everywhere to use every tool in their belt to hold accountable those most responsible for the climate crisis.
And it's interesting, of course, to think about the arguments that corporate America, which benefits from the climate crisis or benefits from what has led to the climate crisis, the arguments that corporate America listens to are financial arguments. I mean, they don't care about the human cost as long as profits are up, but the actual financial cost to their businesses is something that they care deeply about. And many corporations have projected and tried to fold into their projections what the climate crisis will cost them. And, you know, so I imagine one hopes that at least that argument will push them to push a president like Trump or lawmakers like those in the Republican Party to take action on climate change. But I mean, it doesn't seem to to be, even that argument doesn't seem to be gaining much traction.
That's an interesting point. I think more and more prudent investors are taking note of real climate risk. There are also, you know, mounting lawsuits and litigation for climate damages. In October, the New York Attorney General will take ExxonMobil to court for potentially lying to its shareholders about the risk of climate change on its business model. And on Wednesday, Senator Elizabeth Warren introduced the Climate Risk Disclosure Act, which is a powerful opportunity to implement a mechanism to force these companies to disclose the risk that climate has on their business model. And, you know, I think it's something like over $8 trillion in assets of institutions have already committed to divest from fossil fuels. Imagine if these companies actually disclosed the risk that they're experiencing. No prudent investor would be investing in the likes of Exxon if that were the case. A report also came out the same day that the Climate Risk Disclosure Act was reintroduced, showing that I think only about a quarter of publicly traded companies actually disclose the risk at the level that requires, you know, transparency, that would define as transparency to its shareholders. And so this act would force or require publicly traded fossil fuel companies to truly show the risk that they're facing from climate change and the impacts that it brings.
Finally, Lindsay, as we mentioned earlier, grassroots pressure is what has worked. And I understand that in September of this year, there are going to be climate strikes, as they're called, building upon the European-led strikes that have been taking place in Europe and around the world by young people like Greta Thunberg. Tell us a little bit about what 350.org is doing this September.
Absolutely. And like I said, this work is being led by youth, frontline communities, communities of color who have been fighting for real solutions, you know, for decades and decades. On September 20th, in the US and around the world, young people, including Fridays for Future, US climate strikers, and so many more are going to be leading the masses to walk out of school with, you know, a multi-generational movement supporting bold climate action at scale with the crisis. So that's September 20th. And then that whole week, we will see communities across the country and around the world taking action, calling on elected officials to take meaningful action to stop fossil fuel projects and implement a just and equitable transition to renewable energy that science and justice demand.
So that can be found on your website at 350.org?
Yes, 350.org.
We'll link to that from our site later. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Lindsay Maimon, Senior U.S. Communications Specialist at 350.org. We've been discussing Trump's environment speech and the recent congressional call to declare a climate emergency. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe for our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.